Accession number 30646, Mr. Alan Campbell, Reel 2. Now, we were talking about your time on the Isle of Dogs from what, 1940 through, you know, and the bombing. First the bombing, then the V-Rage.
Yeah.
Did you used to play on the bomb sites? Because people often talk about this.
Oh, yes.
Tell us about, what would you do on the bomb sites? I mean, because people talk about kids playing on bomb sites.
Well, we used to have brick fights.
Now, what are they? I mean, tell us about it.
Well, you'd pick up half-ounce brick and throw it at somebody. And somebody would throw a whole-ounce brick back at you. So before you knew it, you was taking sides and you was making up little gangs. Who's going to fight who? If we found an old bike, it'd mostly be quite bent wheels, so we had to scrounge around for wheels and try and make up some sort of a, what do you like to call it, a vehicle. Obviously it had no tyres on, so it was just metal rims, so you couldn't hide from nobody. And if you didn't like your friends or that riding it, you would throw a stick in the front wheel and they would do a flyer over the top. So then you would have the bike until somebody did it to you. And that was it. Debris was everywhere. My cousins, who I mentioned earlier on, they moved away to Glengarnock, well, it was Newcastle Street then. And there was this particular raid, very bad raid. And we had to go, when it finished early morning, we went from our house, which was here, round to Newcastle Street and Christchurch. And we had to climb over piles of rubble where the houses had collapsed onto the road, so you were just climbing over rubble to get to where we had to go. And we saw uniforms. And we learnt afterwards our relations were all right. They'd gone to the crypt in the church. But we're one of the bombs that actually chopped the Cubitt Town School. All it left was the end standing. The complete middle was gone flat, right across the road up onto the water side. But the actual uniforms, what we saw was the bodies of the nurses. And there was also a couple of firemen killed in that particular raid. And that was it. Like, you know, you just go on. It was like warning would go. We would go down into the shelters. We would stay there until early morning. We'd come out. Mother would come out and she'd make up a pot of tea or whatever she had to get hold of. And that was it.
Was there any? How close did they get to your house? Actually, I know it was incendiary damage.
Yeah, we got
any blast.
We finally
them?
Got caught at the finish.
Was that with the V raids? The V.
Yeah, with a.
Well, do you want to tell us about the V1s? Take us through. What happens next then?
The V1s. They was like.
That's a doodle bug, isn't
the
it?
The doodle, so-called doodle bugs.
What were they? What were they like?
Well, they was like an aeroplane, a pilotless aeroplane, with wings and a tailplane, but the actual engine was mounted in that tailplane. Now that would get to a certain point over London, and then it would run out of fuel. Then it would just dive, and it would dive anywhere. You'd hear it till the engine cut out, then you didn't know where it would go. We're not sure whether it was one of those or whether it was first of the V2s, which was an actual rocket, and that landed Right. That landed in East Ferry Road. And the tragedy of it was, there was a old man who was a night watchman in Fred and T. Thorne's. That was like a local builder's yard or company. The East Ferry Iron Foundry was gone. They built most of the cranes in the dock at the time. Oliver's was gone, but the tragedy of it was the old man was due to go on holiday and his son said, "Will you go and have a rest? I will do your night watch for you." So him and his wife stayed in the office, which was a Morrison shelter built within the office itself. And they were killed in that particular raid. We were jammed in because the wall collapsed at the back of us and it collapsed in the front of us. So we couldn't get out. We was within a casement. People dug us out.
What do you remember of being trapped like that? What was it like? It must have been
terrible, because we were screaming. We could hear those people outside, but they reckoned they couldn't hear us. So they didn't know whether we were dead or not. So they had to open them shelters and take whatever they was going to find.
Had the lights all gone out, or did you have some light?
We never had no lights.
So it's pitch black down there, yeah. Trapped.
Yeah. All we had was a candle, if we were lucky. Anyhow.
How long did it take them to dig you out?
Oh, it was quite a while into the morning. They finally got us out, because there was the rescue service and the fire service and everything else that was going on. And it was in a right old state. Actually, the saloon bar and that pub was taken down because the blast went across that way and it sort of took all that part of the building down. And the back of our houses, right across.
And what had happened to your house?
It was, you weren't able to live in it afterwards. So they took us out of there, and they put us in, we went to live in the school for about 6 weeks.
What was it like in temporary accommodation like that?
Well, you just had to muck in with everybody else. We used to have to go along to the washrooms of a morning and wash ourselves. They provided different meals for us, but we used to have to wash ourselves in the tap rooms at the end of the school. There was like wash basins and toilets, so you had to go there. The men had to go up that end and the women and kids down this end. Then you just got ready and waiting for school time. At the finish, they found us accommodation in Melly Street, which was over that side of the island. And we were given a house that had been owned by local people, but with two elderly childless couples lived in it, so it was like two flats. But I remember walking in and they said, "Touch that switch here," and I touched it and a light come on, electric light. And that was when I first saw electric light. Prior to that, when we were over here, it was all gas mantles. If you didn't have any mantle, you just had the burner with no mantle. So you'd have that hissing noise with the gas going. So there we are, and then we went on from there.
So what was it like in the new house then?
Oh, golly. We had one shelter between two houses, as I say, it was like childless couples that had lived there, but moved away because of the bombing. I must have been about 10 and a half, 11 at the time, because I got myself pipe around. I used to help out walkers.
Walkers?
Bread people. Local deliveries. Used to help him pull his barrow through the dock. Deliver bread to the ships. When he wasn't looking, nick a cake for myself. But I think he realised that. And because as time went along, he sort of finding your way around, running up and down stairs. We used to have to run, they closed this bridge off, so we used to have to come all the way around the island to go to school. Then when they did open it, it was a bulge with a ramp either end. So we would get from that side of the island to this side of the island. And as I say, we're still doing the paper rounds, and I remember VE.
Did you follow the progress of the war? Because did you have any of your brothers in it? How did you follow it? As you get
My two older brothers was in the army. Charlie was in the Royal Engineers. Jim, he started off in the artillery, and they put him in DEMS, which I suppose you've heard of. Defensively equipped merchant ships. And then he came off of there, he had accident, he came off of there and he was put into the Royal Scots. So we were living that side of the island. Charlie was already married. We were living that side of the island when he was demobbed, which was, I think, was about 1946.
So it was just the two brothers in?
They were the two older ones. My two sisters, they worked in the Globe Rope Works, Hawkins and Tipsons, which was quite a famous name. Rope making for ships and all the rest of it. And then Freddie and Alex started work, and they came to work at this J.G. Smith's over here. Ronnie, I forget what he worked at actually.
Now,
well, I think he started as a van boy, going on the lorries. But I can remember delivering papers with the invasion on it. So, all this time, you realise what was happening, but it was sort of a thing. It was like an everyday thing. Nobody talked about it too much until somebody got injured or killed. You sort of put that at the back of your mind and you just got on with your life, whatever. And Christine, we used to have to come back here. And getting back to the earlier subject about maths, I put myself into night school to do English. And
now, is that when you left school?
No, before I told them I was older than what I was.
Was it during the war or just after?
Well, after the war.
Right. Tell me about
1945, 46.
Tell me about VE Day then first.
Oh.
Were there any street parties? What do you remember about it?
There were street parties and we had people would scrape together what rations they had, and making little cakes, getting cakes from anywhere, whatever they could lay their hand on. If they had a pot of jam, they would share it to make up something to go on the table. If you had any bunting, which wasn't too much, but you found somebody scraped up something from somewhere. Of course, you had the street parties. I can remember old Mr. Brown, which was about as big as my finger, dancing round a fire in the middle of the road. Whatever he had in his hand, but he made out he was out in the jungle with some sort of a leopard skin or something on that he had. But it went on for quite a while, a few weeks actually. Different impromptu parties,
And you enjoyed them?
But of course, there was no more down the shelter and no more warnings, air raid warnings and things like that.
Now, so what were you doing? You were still at school, were you?
I was still at school. I actually caught the, I told them I was 14 and I was only 13 to join the night school, evening classes, you know, for the LCC. And
so what were you studying at night school?
Mathematics. Technical drawing, and also English and composition. Because a friend of mine who I got to know that side, he was a bit older than me, and he actually started work at 14 at Marks and Clarks at Holborn. They were pattern makers, like, you know, and I wanted to get into that. Hence, me putting myself into night school. But because of different rules and regulations with the number of the classes, they weren't kept up, they were scrapped with different things. I was told to put my name down, because we used to do physical training also. I was told to put my name down for the LCC physical instructor's course.
Now tell me about the physical training you did. You haven't mentioned that before. What is this?
We used to have a physical training class.
Well, who ran it?
That was run by a Mr. Golder.
Was it a club? I mean,
No, that was all part of the LCC.
It was all part of the night school?
Night school, yeah. But Mr. Golder was also a lieutenant in the Sea Cadet. So he used to take the Sea Cadets at St. Paul's Way for two nights. Then for two hourly sessions, Tuesday and Thursdays, he would come down here and make us do physical training. We also had a football team, which played in the Balkan District League. And then on the last hour of a Thursday, he used to make us do dancing, because he told us it would be very good for our balance, among other things.
This is all part of the night school?
Yeah.
And so you did that from what, 45 to 46?
No. I did that from, say 45 to, I was 17 and a half when I stamped out the classroom having a wee spat.
1950?
That was, 1950-51, because I went in the army in 51.
So this night school was quite important to you?
It did help quite a bit, because I was catching up on a lot of things, but as always, it was the math that let me down.
And
I didn't get that job in the patent makers. Drawing office.
Did you join the Sea Scout Cadets as well?
No.
You weren't in them, right, okay. So what did you do? What work were you going to do?
I wanted to be in a drawing office, which I didn't get. So I went for an interview as an office boy. And can you imagine me, ragamuffin, whatever you like to call us, East End boy, I couldn't see me working in an office. So I did manual work.
What as? Who do you work for?
I did a couple of days in a furniture making factory, but I think I was a wee bit rebellious. I did a couple of days at another job, and then I actually got offered a job as a rivet boy in the London Graving Dock, which repaired ships.
Which dock? London?
The London Graving Dock.
Graving, G-R...
G-R-A-V-I-N-G, which was just up the road here.
And did you take that?
I couldn't afford an apprenticeship. So I worked as a rivet boy and a rivet heater.
Now, what is a rivet boy? Because people don't know now.
A rivet boy was, you would have a bucket of cinders to catch the hot rivets in, and he had a pair of tongs which you would pick up the hot rivets with, and you would stick that in the hole of the shell or the decking, whatever you were repairing or doing, building, and the man would hit that with a hammer, and he would hold that with a hammer, what we called an older up, while the rivet has flattened it out. So that was how it went on.
Did you enjoy the work, or?
It was rough work, noisy work, but I was growing up.
And how long did you do that for?
I did that until I went in the army.
So how many years?
So I did that, I left school, actually left school, because what happened was my friend who got the job in Marks, he left at 14. But in that year, I think that was, I think it was beginning of 47. They brought out the other thing about leaving at 15. So I actually went on till 15.
So you left in 48?
48.
So you worked a couple of jobs, and then you worked as a rivet boy?
Yep, and a rivet carrier in the shipbuilding, or ship repairing, and barge building.
What was it like working in there? I mean, you've told us what the job was, but what was it like in there? I mean, was it still busy? Because, you know, all these jobs.
Oh, it was very busy right up until, but even so, I think the end of 48 and beginning of 49, that side of the industry was beginning to go downhill, because they was taking all that type of work to Rotterdam, Amsterdam. They was doing more of that, mostly cheap work, cheap labour, than what they could do it here. And so I stuck with it until I went in the army.
So what would you do for entertainment? I mean, would you go to the pub? I know you're underage, but would you go to pubs or?
No, I didn't drink. I never drank until quite a few years after I came out.
So
the army.
What would you do?
Well, we used to play football, go dancing over a weekend, and go to the pictures, and that was it.
So the usual things?
All the usual things.
What was your favourite occupation? I mean, dancing, did you like the dance halls, or?
It was all right. It was get a look at the girls sort of thing. Sorry. To me, I was a broken-nosed, scrappy-eared kid who thought myself who'd look at me twice.
Did you have any hobbies, you know?
Reading. I used to do a lot of reading and drawing. And that was it.
That's it. So what about being called up then? What's the procedure? You knew you'd be called up at 18.
We knew. Eventually you knew you would be called up, because me mates was... you sort of worked out the ages of different boys and brothers and relations because of when they went in the army or the air force or the navy, and it went on from there. You sort of went in rotation, like, you know.
So tell me how you were called up. What was the procedure?
I got notice of being called up. I had to go and register at the local Ministry of Works at Dodd Street. And from there, I had to wait until I was in full, went to go for a medical. I went for a medical. First of all, I was supposed to go to Wanstead, but then they altered it. I went to the London Museum, or the British Museum.
And what was the medical like? How strict?
Quite strict. Quite strict. They syringed my ears out, and I had a bit of trouble through swimming. And I told the man or the doctor that I couldn't hear him properly, so I was delayed for a little while. I was sent for a hearing aid test at London Hospital, and there was a young Australian there. I don't know whether he was ex-service. But he put the probes up my nose, and I started laughing, which always got me into trouble. And he said to me, what are you laughing for? He said, don't you want to go in the army? I said, I do actually, and I've still got the probes up my nose. I said, but if I was to sneeze now, I would kill you stone dead, so I'd end up in clink. And that, it was that sort of humour, you know. Anyhow, the upshot of it was, I wanted to go in the Royal Engineers, which to do with unloading ships, repairing ships or now, whatever.
That's what you fancied, was it?
I wanted to do, yeah. At least I could do the manual side of it, even if I knew what I was doing, even if I didn't serve an apprenticeship. Because I'd had a go at burners and not so much the welding, but the actual riveting itself. So I thought I would get by in that. Well, I was actually put into the signals.
Now, why were you put into the signals?
I haven't got a clue. Because everybody who used to go up, they'd say, what is your preference? You would say whatever you thought, and you'd end up doing something totally different. So you just accepted what they gave you.
So when exactly were you called up? Do you know?
51.
Do you know which month?
Yes, I went, because of the delay, I went in, instead of going in June 51, I went in September 51. And I went to Catterick.
Now, so what happened when you got to, what do you remember about that? Had you ever been that far before? I mean, you know, I'm not quite sure
not
how much.
Far north, no, I'd been to Oxford, but I'd never been to that much farther than outside of London.
Do you remember the train journey up there? Were you with other people?
Yes, it was a motley crowd, all assembled at King's Cross Station. There was somebody there directing us when to get on the train. And we got to, we went up to Darlington. And then we was shipped from there to Richmond. And when we got out of Richmond, there was all lorries waiting, army lorries waiting for us. And it was armoured corps to the left and signals to the right.
So was it the Royal Signals Corps then?
Oh. Well, we always put out, we only had Royal Signals on our arm. We said Royal Signals. A lot of people prefer to call the Royal Corps of Signals. Well, I don't know whatever the difference is. I don't know.
And was it a particular part of the Royal Corps? Was there a training battalion or anything? What were you in?
We went to Number 7 Regiment, which was, you've done your foot training and square bashing.
So it's Number 7, is it training regiment or just regiment?
Number 7 training regiment.
Now, what was your reception like when you got to?
Well, they flicked through, you was given like a IQ test, things to put together, and they used to flick through books with colours on and see if you could pick out a number or another form of eye test and whatever.
And how'd you do it then?
Well, I suppose I was pretty basic like everybody else. As I say, you didn't know what you was doing, you just tried to do your best. Whatever you thought was your best wasn't good enough, apparently. Then. And I ended up, when I'd been done my basic training.
Oh, hang on, we've got basic training. So how did they treat you when they first met? You know, when you got off the train at Darlington?
Oh,
the transit.
God.
Was there lots of shit? What, I mean, what, there's a car.
There was actually, we was told to embark on these lorries. And we were told not to lean against the sides. Is it all right? We were told not to lean against the sides, which a few of them did because they got on the lorry, threw themselves into the lorry, and that was it. Get up off the side of the lorry so they could peg you in properly. And there was one fella on there, that was the first time I ever saw blue suede shoes. Believe it or not. So then, when we was taken in and we was taking a draw out kit, first couple of days,